Up next on JusticeFound.org, Roland Washington interviews Shantha Jambulkar from the High Risk Infant Interagency Council. Today on the Worker Justice Talk, they discuss Shantha's work. This is David Kordsmeyer from the Justice Foundation, and I'm excited to bring you another edition of the Worker Justice Talk with the host, Roland Washington.
This is Roland Washington for JusticeFound.org. Shantha, how are you doing today?
I am excellent. Thank you, Roland. Thank you for having me here.
One of the things that we deal with on our program at Justice Found is equality and also a bunch of R's. So some of the R's is recovery and redemption and resurrection and repentance. And one brother that just recently got out of prison said it was about being real and reality. And so I don't know what the R would be for you.
That's a great question. The first word that came to my mind, so I'll work with that, is respect. I grew up in a community in New York that didn't understand a lot about what it meant to be dealing with a child of Indian immigrants. So there wasn't a lot of respect to be had in my childhood in that I grew up in a very white, affluent, narrow-minded community that largely out of ignorance just treated me. The literal words when I was a kid was like chocolate and everyone else was vanilla and what was wrong? Why was I chocolate? So when I think about what guides me and what gets me up in the morning and what helps me guide when I'm at a question I don't have an answer to, it's where does respect for all show up? Respect. So that might be an R word that I'd throw out there, but all the words you said were just as key.
So you're in New York.
Yes.
In a affluent area, but you're the chocolate one. So how do you go from that to social work? How do you go from New York to the Western Addition to the Mission District?
You know, I think being invisible, feeling unseen, feeling misunderstood, feeling disconnected from yourself is the beginning of something, and that energy's got to go somewhere. So I feel the gratitude that the energy led me to want to understand myself more. And the way I could figure that out best was I could not find a lot of people that look like me, but I could find other people around me that seemed to have a need that looked something like me. So when I think about the first work that I did in social work, it was not a social work job, it wasn't a social work position, it was an after-school counselor. It was a summer camp counselor working with kids and kids who were written off. And I think a lot of people in the program asked me, who do you think you are as an Indian woman working with these kids? What do you think you have to give? And I would say, those kids are going to let me know what they need. But the best I can do is respect those children and offer a place from which they can be who they want to be with me, because I didn't have that opportunity as a kid. I didn't have a place where I could be me, all of me, and have somebody ask questions about me and want to know who I was. There was a sense of, if I assimilated into what was there, then I was accepted. If I wanted to be me and have my father's Hindu holidays or have my mother's sari and her special dress and her special makeup and wardrobe be accepted, none of that was okay. That was what made me different. That's what made me chocolate. That's what made me other. That's where the isolation showed up. So there was a lot of me having to assimilate and fit into things. And so for me, the deepest connection has come from knowing that if I am not able to be all of me in most places, probably there are other people who are not able to be all of them in most places. And that's where the work came from. So, you know, however it sounds, it's very intuitive how I have ended up in this work. But that was the origins, working with kids that I sensed had some sense of not being all of them in any one place. And me coming from, just tell me who that is. Can you show me that? Are you interested in allowing me to know who that is? And to be an adult figure in those children's lives and those families' lives, to care about those children. It started a platform from which, you know, the rest of my life went. But that was in my, you know, early 20s, late teens. That's where that work started.
Yeah, it's interesting because part of the way America seems to be is that supposedly this is a melting pot. And the key word is, as you say, assimilation and being invisible. Mm-hmm. There's a documentary called Race, and they point out how there was a, I think his name was even Singh. He sued the government because back then you were only black and white.
Correct.
So his thing was that we're white.
And he represented,
yes, and the Warren Court, I believe it was, or one of those courts back there said no way. And then there was a Japanese brother did the same thing. Mm-hmm. And yet you're not allowed to be white or white privilege or white consciousness, but you're definitely not, you're definitely treated in a way that's not equal.
Mm-hmm.
So they have no problem taking your resources mm-hmm. or making money off you, but at the same time, you're not treated equal. Like you said, you have Hindu holidays, you guys, your mom wears saris and on, but I'm sure they would want you to celebrate the 4th of July and all mm-hmm. these other things and come to their barbecues, but mm-hmm. they're not going to do the things with you. And I think to me, that's the common thread, which is, even with immigrant people, to me, the common thread is slavery. So you come here, and in some capacity, you're invisible, like blacks were slaves. You work, and you're not paid what you're supposed to be paid, like black folks are, and or you're isolated,
mm-hmm.
like successful black mm-hmm. people were. And then people wonder why we don't buy into this thing about this individualism stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So on that note, from what I understand of your job, you guys are kind of like a family, like a full circle. You're giving the support.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of articulate what do you do and how this comes about?
Sure. So we're called a round table for two reasons. The intention is to bring together at a table all of the people that work with a family who has a child where they have questions or needs or concerns about what's happening for their children, and they want to get answers and they want to get connected.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine the round table would be you as a parent who has a child with a set of questions, a set of needs, a set of services you already know they need but not sure how to get them.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you want at that round table? Who would you want alongside you? Would it be the doctor? Would it be the child care providers, the teachers in the classroom? Would it be somebody in your life, a grandparent, somebody who spent a lot of time with the children? Who do you want at that table? And how can all those people partner together to get what you want as a family for your child? And there's a second round table, if you imagine, that sits on the outside or alongside that table. And that's a round table of providers in the community that work with children birth through five
mm-hmm.
that have been meeting for over 15 years, I believe the number is, without a meeting place. They used to meet because they knew that some families, some kids were not getting served because the services were not intuitive enough, were not accessible, were not easy enough to access, and so they wanted to get together because they were in all those major agencies where the kids were supposed to be, and things weren't happening, and they knew it. So they would have these informal conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Why is this not happening? Do anybody know of these kids? Can someone help connect this kid to a service? And there was a round table of folks that did that. But that round table formalized, became part of this agency work. And now my role is to bring information about the families to that round table
mm-hmm.
in a formal way. Here mm-hmm. are the families we're working with. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what my partner in the work. We have one other person doing the work with our bilingual and monolingual Spanish-speaking families.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we're doing. Here's what we've connected them to. Help us see outside of the box of what's available, what systemically can be done to change things for the processes here, make this easier for families so they don't have to go through this next time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two roundtables. It's the family itself, parent-driven. Parents decide who they want at the table to do, help them connect their kids to make them successful. And then another level of connection to a roundtable of providers in the community to say, what more can be done, because this isn't the only family going through this. So my role is to find the families in the community who have the needs
mm-hmm.
and walk them through the processes that they have questions about, help them drive through the systems that they want to get driven through, that they want connection to.
So they are leading.
They are.
They
Absolutely.
Are leading.
Absolutely.
So it's not the traditional thing where mm-hmm. people are telling them what to do and telling them what's wrong with them.
Parent-driven, family-driven desire for your child. And sometimes the most complicated part that I have found is, I know I am not a mother yet.
Mm-hmm.
And when I will be, the first thing I will have to give up is knowing everything I need to know. And that is the number one thing. If families knew that they know it informally, they just don't hear it in that acknowledged way, which I think really hurts. It hurts us from being the best people we can be. It's okay not to know. So to walk in with a set of questions, what does it mean when one child is already talking at age 3, mm-hmm. and this child I have now can't seem to get more than 2 words out?
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Why is that happening? You have that funny feeling. I always say, if you have a funny feeling, that's an okay person to come. Mm-hmm. That's an okay referral.
Mm-hmm.
Bring your funny feeling, bring your gut, bring your tummy, like, bring your scratching head. Why is this happening?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're 0 to 5, there's a lot of stuff happening, and it's hard to tell. Is this normal development? Will they grow out of this? Is it a concern? The teacher said something, but my doctor said don't worry about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But it's confusing, right? Everybody's giving you different messages. It's okay not to know, but it's okay to find someone who you can say, I have this question, and I'm trying to get an answer to it. I want someone to tell me, do a little bit of a test here and there, check out how they're doing. I don't want a label.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want a label for my kid. I don't need that. I need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And with that information, then you as a parent, you drive what you want for your children. And I think that the biggest thing that I can ask of anywhere when I go, if I go to doctor's offices, you know, doctors can refer someone to me. A teacher can refer a family to me if they're working with the family.
Mm-hmm.
But every time we say, you have to get family okay. If you want to tell the family about me, you can tell the family about me.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell the family about me. But if you have a recommendation, Dr. So-and-so, about a child that you've seen, you have a concern, there might be a speech delay or might be a concern, you can talk to that family and say, would you be interested in being connected with a community worker who can help you to ask questions and see if there are answers out there about your child? But if that family says no, that's where it stops.
Okay.
Or if I follow up with that family because the doctor told me yes, and I talk to the family, they say no, it's okay,
mm-hmm.
it's all good. I say, great, here's my number. If you ever need me,
mm-hmm.
call me. And that's really important because from that point, there are not a lot of systems that start at that baseline so that people feel safe and confident to know that the information that they get will not label their child, will not place them in some category they didn't anticipate, will not, you know, label them permanently in something or unlabel them permanently. It is about families learning what they want to learn in
mm-hmm.
order to have the experience they want for their children and to grow in that.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't know something, you learn something, and then it informs you, and then you're that much more aware. So we're family-driven, but we get referrals from everywhere, Roland. We get referrals from families who worked with us, and they told other families about us. We get referrals from, we'll be in a childcare setting, and somebody will mention, oh, you know, I need help. My child's turning 3. That means the school district is supposed to help you with services when
hmm.
the child turns 3. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, I didn't.
Because when you're 3, you're not necessarily in the school.
I didn't think
right?
you were, yeah.
So it doesn't mean, that doesn't matter, though. If you're in a childcare setting, if you're in a family provider, you've got your grandmother taking care of your child, your grandmother takes care of maybe 3 other children, and you notice something happening with your child, if that child turns 3 and he gets tested and is determined eligible for services, the school district is responsible to help your child get speech services starting
mm-hmm.
from age 3 forward.
Mm-hmm.
A whole host of school district services. So basically it's informing families on, families can come to us from anywhere with a question about, what do I do if I'm worried because it seems like my child can't sequence numbers and letters properly.
Mm-hmm.
We've been teaching, he just can't pick up on that. Well, there are screening tools you can take to kind of get a sense of relative to other children in that rough age range, how do they do. There's assessment teams throughout the city that will give you tests for your child, to give you sort of an area, like here's the range of how your child's
mm-hmm.
doing,
mm-hmm.
and the school district services. And then from there, if there's an area of need, it's figuring out, what would you like to do about that? Would you like to have them connected to a speech therapist? Would you like them to be connected to a physical therapist so that they can learn how to use fine motor?
Mm-hmm.
Fine motor is about learning how to hold a pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be able to use crayons and draw, you know, within the lines.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain age, it's okay if a kid can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
As they get older and then it's more difficult for them to do that, what you often find is that kids in a childcare, 3, 4 years old, they start getting frustrated because they're trying so hard to stay in that line, to cut that paper straight. It's hard to do. They can't do it. It has sometimes, you know, and if you're in an environment without the information, you could hear there's something wrong with your child. You could hear, you know, they'll grow out of it, and
mm-hmm.
then there you are a year later, and they haven't grown out
mm-hmm.
of it, and you could begin to think, okay, maybe there's something wrong with my child.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is, if you know information about a child and you know that their fine motor or their gross motor areas need support, there are people out there that you can get connected with who can do some practice exercises with you, can teach you as a parent some exercises to work with. There are kits out there that are intended for 3-4-year-olds called fine motor kits, mm-hmm. gross motor kits. Some families don't know about those. So our job is to link families to the right service, the right person, the right assessment as it fits what their questions are about their child.
So when it comes to, like you were saying about growing up and being an invisible,
yes.
it sounds like that's what happens to these kids too. It's like if you're sitting here and you're not fitting in to the so-called standards, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden you can be marginalized or actually ignored.
Yes.
And then you're bringing this to them where you're telling them it's all right. Let me walk through. You're their advocate. So the parents continue to be an advocate for their children like mm-hmm. they're supposed to, but then you're like that extra, you know, put a tire in the tank. Hey, you're getting mm-hmm. to the next level and stuff. From the kids that you have worked with, mm-hmm. do most of them come out where there's nothing really wrong and stuff like that? It's not that serious?
You know what I find? I find that families have a feeling about something and they don't know how to put their finger on what exactly the concern area is, but they know that something's holding their child back mm-hmm. from being as successful as they could be. And it's a matter of sorting through the pieces of what that is. And sometimes you start in one place and you end up somewhere else. But the reality is families know that their kids need to be connected to something to be successful. And every kid has a different prescription. Every kid has its own set of needs. You know, one of the biggest things that comes up is, you know, you get kids written off for behavior issues.
Mm-hmm.
Can't contain them. Can't sit still. Can't control their bodies. Might be ADHD. Huge labels for small children. And really what's coming down to is some of those kids have a little bit of a speech delay. What happens when you have a speech delay? When you're 4 years old, you can't tell somebody what you need.
That's right.
When you can't tell them what you need, you have to find another way to use that energy. That energy's got to transfer. Okay?
That's right.
And when that energy transfers and you don't have providers or doctors or people in the community who are holding that piece, looking at it from that angle of, is there a gap? Could the language be holding back? Could there? Then those children end up spiraling. Their behavior gets out of control. They're not socializing with the other kids. They're confrontational with the other kids. Maybe they're even hitting a teacher. And so, you know, you've got these huge issues that you get a referral for, and they really stem down to something probably pretty small
mm-hmm.
and specific that's addressed. And when you address that, all this other energy opens up, and these kids have a very different experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say the issue that you think was going on is oftentimes not what's happening. There's a feeling you have, and you're following the feeling, but you've got all these big, big activities, big complaints, big concerns that get smaller when you have a baseline to start from where you're like, let's look at these areas of my child's development. Let's look at these environment structures. Let's look at what would be the baseline that could allow this child to have, allow my child to have the experience that he wants. And from there, all that other big stuff just mm-hmm. seems to like dissipate fast. You know, the energy just shifts around. So I would say it's not so much that issues disappear by the time you're done. It's more that you get to figure it out, you get to pinpoint, I see. That's where, if we worked there, if we gave a little support,
mm-hmm.
seems like this kid seems to respond to that. Seems
mm-hmm.
like the kid opens up to other children, opens up to the teacher, learns more, can sit still, can pay attention. You know, so I find that it's a bit like a puzzle. And every family's got their puzzle to deal with. And they've got the pieces, they have all the pieces rolling. They're all sitting on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But who has time to put all the pieces together? You got 10 other things to do. You not only do you have your other children that you have to be taking care of, and they've got their things going on, but you've got your life.
Mm-hmm.
You've got paying your bills. You've got, how do I figure out childcare for my kid? So things as simple as getting kids connected to childcare, getting kids with special needs connected to the right childcare, getting families connected to the right doctor And the right doctor makes a big difference. Not just a doctor, a pediatrician. A pediatrician who knows development of children. Because I'm telling you, I mean, it's amazing what you will hear sometimes is not the full picture for a 0 to 5 year old child. Mm-hmm. You need to find someone who's got the skills. But do we know who that person is? Getting a dentist, getting a referral, these are the kinds of things that are, they seem baseline, but they're key. They set the groundwork up so that a round table of people can provide information to a parent that they need to allow their child to have all the dreams come true, all the dreams that a family has for a kid. Oh, yeah. So, and that brings visibility. And you're right. I mean, I think you asked about invisibility, and I would say many of these children are isolated in the corners, are written off, mm-hmm. are pinpointed and constantly picked on, and then they themselves reinforce because they think, well, that's who I am now. I am the bad kid. I am the rough and tough kid. I'm the one that uses my body to communicate what my problem is. And no one's interrupting the system. But the family knows better. They want a different experience for that kid, but all they're hearing is, come pick up your kid. Your kid's a problem today. Come bring them up. That's, you know, many of our families, they need to know a school should not be sending your kid home every day. A school should be coming up with a service, a plan, you know, a motion to figure out what's happening. What's happening underneath here? What areas might be beyond this kid's control that's keeping the energy moving in the systems the way they are? Move the energy around. So yeah.
What happens when they turn 5? If, let's say, they still need the services, what happens when they turn 5?
What we try to do, what we hope to do is, we hope to meet kids before they're 5 years, 11 months. Because at 5 years, 11 months, the intensive kind of work that we can do, and I mean intensive meaning, I can stay with a family for 1 week, or mm-hmm. I can stay with the family up to 5 months mm-hmm. to stay, make sure that they get connected mm-hmm. to what they're interested in for their family, mm-hmm. their children. That intensive work is not available through the office that I'm at, through the round table. Mm-hmm. However, we partner with a resource center called Support for Families of Children with Disabilities. But really what it is, it's a family resource center. It's a parent-driven resource center for families who have children birth through 18 with kids with special needs. Hmm. And special needs can be, you know, anemia, can be asthma, mm-hmm. can be full-on disability needs. Mm-hmm. But the rule is when you call that number, you've got a parent picking up the phone who has children with special needs and disabilities who gets that the systems out there are complicated, not easy to navigate, they're stressful, it's hard, you need a break sometimes, you need someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. So we, by the time we're done with working with families, we hope that we've built for them some information, some understanding of their rights in the system, mm-hmm. their ability, where they know they can advocate, where they know are the safe places to go to get more information, a good doctor, a good, you know, environment. And then from there, we hope that places like Support for Families are places where this family can call for continued help to advocate, to stand up for what they want for their children. So there isn't a source, there isn't a round table like this mm-hmm. for children after 5, but, you know, for sure there are issues after 5, right? There are needs.
Actually, like, disability is a label, because Leroy Moore, who's our who's one of the collaborators of Community Worker and Justice Found.org, uh-huh. Has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's what it is. That's the one where you're born and you don't get the oxygen to your brain and on, but Leroy got his BA, was working on his master's. Mm-hmm. He's a disability, a minority disability advocate. But it's the same thing. It's just still like another thing for people to ignore you on. I mean, Stephen Hawks barely can supposedly communicate, and this is like a brilliant man and stuff. And there's just this thing about, instead of us connecting the dots, it just seems like we spend so much energy trying to find something different. And then, like you said, mm-hmm. label the person and on, and you feed into it. I mean, I'm a parent. I mm-hmm. Got girls, but actually one of my girls used to be very active, but out that whole thing, it's like, you know, girls don't hit, blah, 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 and then you just, and then it must be because she's mixed, and, you know, just all, yeah. And then people just start, instead of going the way you stated, which is respecting them, and then trying to provide mm-hmm. what people need, people start looking at ways to label people, disrespect them, and then deny them mm-hmm. what they need. And I guess actually Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie is a great example, because even though they got everything else, money, power, mm-hmm. but obviously somebody didn't respect him enough to rein him in at certain points. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like even Paris is finally getting a wake-up call, like, yeah, you shouldn't have the right mm-hmm. to go around and do whatever you want when you want. Because mm-hmm. if you drive on a suspended license and you run into somebody and cripple them, then you've just ruined somebody's life because you were not willing to follow the rules. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like what needs to happen is this needs to have more of a, like, you throw a rock in the water and this should ripple out, because I'm sure in the public defender's office, I'm sure in the criminal justice office, I'm sure in the Jewish community, I'm sure in all these places that they're probably touching on these individuals in some way. Mm-hmm. And this could and it seems like people should connect more, because it almost sounds like everybody might have a different way of dealing with the same situation, which of course is going to be different. And then, like you say, if you're the parent trying to circumnavigate this, mm-hmm. and you already got the stress of wondering what's wrong, what's happening with my kid, is there mm-hmm. something wrong, mm-hmm. then who do I actually trust? Mm-hmm. Do I trust Kaiser or Stanford? Mm-hmm. Or do I trust mm-hmm. a holistic doctor mm-hmm. or my minister? Mm-hmm. Or do I trust none of them? And like you said, which is probably the truth, do I go with my gut feeling yes. and go look for an advocate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say, what you are describing, Roland, is that othering process mm-hmm. in which you put somebody in that category of other. Mm-hmm. They're the, you know, they're the issue because they're not this or this, mm-hmm. they're this, they're an other thing. It's never served any of us to be othered. Mm-hmm. And we can all think of times in which someone wanted to other us in order to feel better or mm-hmm. more safe about their own position. Mm-hmm. Right? So to break that down, people all over the place, when they get scared, try to other something. And if you pull away from the fear, if you take a breath and you say, what serves, what is the most compassionate path in this moment for a child where you don't understand what's happening, you have to ask yourself, who is the expert who sees this child every day? Mm-hmm. Who knows? Who is a true expert? Mm-hmm. And a family is an expert, even if a family, and especially if a family comes to you and says, I don't know, mm-hmm. but I know. That is the expert. That yes. is the wisdom.
Yes.
That is the foundation. That is the earth from which, you know, buildings are
yes,
built.
Yes, yes.
So I feel that what we do is, you know, we allow systems that seem more powerful or look bigger or have more letters after their name than mm-hmm. us to identify information for us, and sometimes I think that information is based on fear. Mm-hmm. You don't understand mm-hmm. what's happening. You have to label it. You have to other it. So I would say, you know, when I was growing up, one thing that I started to go through as a teenager up through through my 20s was profound anxiety, profound depression. And it manifested in this very interesting way, because in my own community, which was my family, mm-hmm. they had a very difficult time understanding that. And there's an Asian concept of strength and of mental courage. There's no room for anxiety. Mm-hmm. There's no room for fears. You press forward, and that's the immigrant. That's the immigrant mentality too.
Sure. Yeah.
You don't survive by taking a break to see how you're feeling. You keep going.
You really don't have a choice.
Yeah. No, your survival is based on the survival. And so then in the school environment, there was that much more pressure surrounded by people who wanted to label you as the Asian kid mm-hmm. who probably knows a lot, probably real smart and everything, mm-hmm. probably doesn't have any issues. Mm-hmm. Another place of isolation. Nobody really wanted to follow up and see what actually is happening. Mm-hmm. So what I find is, in both communities, in the community I was from and the community that I was not from, there was a fear. And in that fear, it was difficult for anyone to help me take apart what my needs were. What I really needed was just a place to process that, being the daughter of an immigrant, being the only brown person surrounded by white, mm-hmm. being stereotyped and labeled and casted as a particular way when really I had other things going on for me, mm-hmm. were the things that I needed someone to be. I needed to be heard. Mm-hmm. I needed to be felt, you know, I needed to be understood, to have some difference that fit within. Everyone has that difference, mm-hmm. right? So now when I think about, you know, and it was so, it's subtle what I was going through. There were no other kids going through it. So when I think about how many children I think are actually going through common things in the community now, over and over, and how families are seeing it because they themselves went through it, for me, there's that much more of a reason for families to recognize their role as the expert. They know. They were raised in it. They know it not because there's a funny feeling in your stomach because maybe you're hungry or maybe it was if you're worried about your child. You lived it.
Mm-hmm.
You knew it. You knew it. You can smell it.
Mm-hmm.
You can smell when you're not being recognized, when you're not being understood, when there's something up, but you don't want to be labeled. You want to be acknowledged. You want to sort it out. What's happening here? Mm-hmm. And that's with children, small children, 0 through 5. I want families to hear me because I support them. My phone calls with them are, tell me what your interest, tell me what you think, tell me what you hear. What's your experience? The teacher may have mentioned this to me. What's your thought on that? Where are you on that? And from there, that's where all the answers begin. So I think from there, you can use all those services and all those systems that are out there. You use them to your advantage. And you figure out, how do I advocate for my child in this environment based on what I know is my truth, the truth for me and my child. So.
And then you also used to work for a family shelter, is that what you're saying?
I worked for Homeless Children's Network, and it's a nonprofit in the Mission that works with homeless families and children across the city. We worked in transition shelters, we worked in permanent supportive housing, we worked in schools, wherever children are,
mm-hmm.
where they are, where they're managing the stress and the overwhelming burden of having to try and have a childhood amidst mm-hmm. trying to have a safe base that's
mm-hmm.
home.
Mm-hmm.
We provided mental health services, case management services for the families, basically a connection to a place that understands that there's a parallel process happening when you've got a home base you're trying to build. It's very difficult to build the base of a solid education,
mm-hmm.
a solid whatever it is. Everything else is, you need that foundation. And so Homeless Children's Network provides awesome therapists, incredible case managers, great people that are consultants in child care settings where homeless children are. You have many children in a setting, and some of those children are without homes. And the needs of those children, the support those families need to understand, here's what your child's going through this week,
mm-hmm.
here's some things that came up for your child, here's some things they talked about, here's some activities we can try out. It's a very specific set of supports, and it's something that families absolutely deserve and are oftentimes, again, othered. Those are the children that don't come in clean. Those are the children that have, you know, there's all these kinds of assumptions and
mm-hmm.
labels people want to put. And so many times families don't let places know when they're in between housing,
mm-hmm.
transitioning between places. They don't want their child labeled. So Homeless Children's Network says, you tell us where your family is. Tell us where you want us to connect with your child. Is it in school? Because they're going to school every day. Is it at the shelter? Because that's where you guys
mm-hmm.
come home at night. Where do you want us to come? And they work there. They work their hours around it. They work
mm-hmm.
their services around what the family needs. So
this is interesting. So once again, I'm going to say, I always chuckle when I say, but once again,
mm-hmm.
I have somebody who talks more in the we than in the me. This is probably about the fifth person that I've talked to who's done a lot for people, but it's the we versus the me. And when we look at it, for you to deal with other people's kids, for you to deal with kids, I mean, children are supposedly the most valuable thing that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're so valuable that they're even they're all innocent looking, so they can, you know, not be preyed upon. But yet so few people really value them, rather less value them as who they are, not my kid or my nephew or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy named Tamantra Scott who was somebody that touched my life like that, where you are what they call Scotty's kids. And if you were Scotty's kids, Scotty seemed to just look out for you and try to give you wisdom and link you with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a round table within himself.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are, somebody who's from back east, somebody from a different culture,
mm-hmm.
somebody who has their own set of experiences,
mm-hmm.
but you're willing to come to the one who should be the most valued, but are not being given their value, and you're participating in organizations and you're also advocating for these young people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. I think that's it takes a hell of a person to do
it's,
that.
You know, Roland, I would say it's my gift. Mm-hmm. It's my honor to be able to partner with families who already know when I step in that they want something for their family and they're just trying to figure out where and how and what it's going to look like.
And you're going to do it for them.
I'm a link on the way. The family is the gift of, the family is my gift. So I would say that I always say this, I'm the luckiest woman in the world. This job is my dream job because I have the flexibility to come to your home or to pick up the phone and call you and for you to say, I'm having a tough time connecting into this service. I have called them. They have not called me back. I have not been able to reach them. I don't understand what's happening. I have a confusion. I've gone to two doctors and I still don't understand what's happening here. It is my honor to say, what can I do in the service of helping you do what you've already done, which is get things started, which is have a notion, a feeling, and know that you want to do something about that. So it's my, this is my privilege because what the families teach me about is how I can strengthen the social work system that I believe in. I believe there's a number of workers and providers out in the community who want to do this work. Mm-hmm. And we are isolated as well.
That's right.
So there's the work we want to do, but there are systems and infrastructures that say, well, you can do it at this time, in this way, and in this, but you know, but not like this, and don't, not though, and this, and you know, and that is, so our work is strengthened by families already informing us, listen, I'll tell you what I need, I'll tell you what it looks like, and I'll tell you three other families that I live next to, that I know, that are my family members that need the same thing. And so my joy is that I'm in an agency where my capacity allows me to stay with you as a family as long as you need until you feel linked into a service, and then I follow up with you down the road. How did that work? You thought that this was the service you wanted. You thought this was the connection. Did this connection really help you?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, no. And if we're still within the 5 years, 11 months, let's keep working on it. If we're not, who are we going to link you to? And it's a process, it's a journey, as you know, Roland. You have to keep building those systems. You have to keep building those people out there that I can refer to so that I can put you in, put you as a parent in the hands of someone else I trust.
That's right.
That, you know, because that, for me, is I'm not going to hand you over without being honest with you about what I know I'm handing or what I don't know I'm handing you to. But, you know, that's, for me, that's the tough work. That's the work that, you know, takes a little bit of thinking and me moving around in the community. But that, that relatively, when I have families who already come to me ready and knowing what they want, that's, you know, I couldn't be more privileged. I couldn't be more honored.
So in closing, I'm going to let you have the last word, let you extrapolate on something on your mind. So what would you like to say in closing?
I hope that families feel, despite a lot of things that are happening in our communities, I think you mentioned I'm living in the Western Addition, and I'm feeling a lot of pain. I'm feeling a lot of heaviness in my community. And where do you find your power and where do you find your peace in the middle of so much happening? And if I could extend, you know, my heart and my services through what I do as a social worker to families in the service of them reclaiming, reaccessing that power and peace every day, that would be my gift to myself, which I think I need sometimes because there are some days I walk home and I think, how are we going to do it? How are we going to get through this? What I do every day, sometimes 9 to 6, sometimes 12 to 8, sometimes early in the morning, sometimes late in the evening, where families are when they need something, that keeps me going, that keeps my spirit going. And I would like to know from families if there's some way that I can support them and their spirit, what they need, because we're going through a lot right now. So I would say if families could hear me and know that I'm one of those people out there that truly believes in the power and peace that resides within a family, and that that is what leads to successful children. Either I am a conduit for that, or maybe they themselves are figuring out where that conduit is. I feel really lucky to have met you, Roland, and I feel really blessed to have been connected into Justice Found, because I think we need to all be speaking our truth in the service of what we believe.
Actually, we might use that line. If you give us your permission, that sounds like a great line.
It's from modular.
Yeah. And so, so I'm going to give this back to David Kordsmeyer. So now we have another R. It's called reclaiming. So we can add that to our list and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving this back to David Kordsmeyer at justicefound.org.
Are you a small business or entrepreneur? You know you need to be online, but you don't know where to start? Come to RedTap. We'll help you with all of your online needs. Everything from website design to e-commerce site setup to e-marketing. We'll speak to you in your language and help you build a successful online business. Give us a call at 415-285-0585. RedTap is located in the heart of the Mission District at 1360 Valencia Street and is a proud sponsor of the JusticeFound.org podcast. You've been listening to the Worker Justice Talk podcast edition with Roland Washington. The Worker Justice Talk is a production of JusticeFound.org and RedTap. Most editions are recorded live at the studios of RedTap, located in the heart of the Mission District in San Francisco. The Worker Justice Talk is available online at justicefound.org and for download on iTunes. The post-production audio engineer was me, David J. Kordsmeyer. Join us next time for another edition of the Worker Justice Talk.